Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today, I get to talk to John Pete, who is the owner of Jane's Hideaway and Jane's on Top in Nashville, Tennessee, and he will tell us all about his quick path to ownership. He did his time as a bartender and what it's like to open up a bar, restaurant, and music venue in the Music City during a pandemic. And it's become a Nashville favorite. So make sure you get a little nip of whiskey so that you can take a listen to this particular episode. And we're going to tell you all about the ghost of Boots Randolph as well.
I am the owner-operator of a bar, restaurant, venue in Nashville, Tennessee called Jane's Hideaway. And then we have a second project that is on our rooftop called Jane's on Top. So we have I always call it a Tennessee supper club down low. Cool food, lots of local ingredients, Tennessee grass-fed animals, all the fun stuff there.
Yeah.
And that's our first floor where we do basically just live bluegrass or roots music every night. And then the top floor, we try a lot more. We're kind of open that stage up to really anything that doesn't get a lot of traction in downtown Nashville. So there is a ton of music in Music City, USA, but a lot of it is the same music. One spot after the next. So we've tried to platform some different stuff.
And is this your first venture?
This is my first bar.
Yes. Yeah, congratulations on that. It's a feat. I own a bar too, and it's my first. And getting that thing done took a while. You know, making that happen was a dream come true and also completely horrifying.
It is absolutely more than anything a dream come true.
Yes.
I try to make sure I tell people thank you every day. I literally, when we have great acts in here, I'm like, you guys are making my dream come true. I promise. Yeah. You
know? So you've been in the bartending world for a while then, right? To work your way up to owner.
Yes. My whole adult life has been in bar and restaurants.
Yeah. How old were you when you started?
I started bar backing in Cincinnati, like 19 and then through 20. And then was lucky enough to get behind the bar when I was 21, and I'm 32 now, 33 next month. So yeah, I've been paying my bills, pouring drinks. Looking at all life. So
when you were bar backing, when you were behind the bar, I mean, was there something I've talked to so many people who were just like, I always wanted to be a bartender. Even when they were like 18, 19 years old, they're like, I saw that and that's what I wanted to do. I mean, there's some people who fell into it, but there's some people who are like, there was just something about it. What was that for you?
The schedule works for me. I'm a night person.
You're a night person, yet you were up early this morning. See, that's the pitfalls of ownership.
You know, it works for me. And there's something really cool about, like, it's instant gratification. You know what I mean? Like, people come to you, they're like, this is what I want. And you're like, I have all that right here. I can make that happen right now, you know? And that's just like always been neat to me, you know? And it's, sometimes you get to introduce people to new things and do that kind of stuff. And I mean, most of my friends, my girlfriend, everyone I really know now, it's like I've met on some end of the bar, you know, either we were working next to each other or they were across the bar from me. But yeah, the bar's just, it's been where I like to be. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, when you first got started, when you were just 21 and all, what kind of place was it that you were bartending at?
I was working when I was 21, my first like real.
When you were legal. Yeah.
Yeah. My first, like, I'm pouring drinks, I'm working in a service well bar job was at a Bakersfield in Cincinnati, which is named after Bakersfield, California.
Oh.
And they do kind of California style street tacos, really good guacamole. Mm-hmm. And their whole thing is like tacos, tequila, and whiskey. And it appealed a lot to the student in me at the time too, because there's like, you get back there and half their bar's whiskey and half the bar's tequila. I think there's like one mezcal available in the whole state of Ohio at the time. None of the other cool, lesser known agave stuff that we get now, but it was like, literally like, here's 50 whiskeys and you can learn as much or as little as you want about these. And then here's this wild world of 50, 100%, you know, agaves. And it's like, just a really, there's, you could be the biggest dork about whatever you decide to be a nerd about. But for me, the spirits world was always really interesting. I was like, I want to be a nerd about this. You know?
I completely understand that.
I would like to figure this out.
And it sounds like when you were working at Bakersfield, that that was when the tequila thing was really blasting off in this country overall. I mean, I'm a California girl, so we were aware of it already, you know, for a while. But you're right. I would go to other states and be like, do you guys have any mezcal? And they're like, what are you talking about? Isn't that the thing with the worm in it? You know?
I mean, it was cool because there was a desire for knowledge about that at that time too, you know. And we had one of the largest selections in Cincinnati for tequila, which, you know, is not a well-known tequila city, but you could still kind of be like, hey, you're into this, maybe we'll try this, you like that, maybe we'll, you know, there's room to introduce people and show people really cool stuff that they didn't know they wanted. You know, so that was always a draw for me.
So. Well, the other thing interesting, and I have to ask, is it's a place called Bakersfield, and it was named after the city out here in California, which is also very well known for the Bakersfield sound. So you had to have some Buck Owens, I'm assuming, while you were there.
That was a big part of the name, was kind of the outlaw country Bakersfield sound kind of thing. So there are quite a few Bakersfields now. I'm not even sure how many.
Really?
Yeah, they've grown that brand quite a bit. There's one in Nashville. I'm still very good friends with one of the owners, and they were actually given a key to the city of Bakersfield, California.
Oh, wow.
Which is really, really neat. That's in their tiny original one that I was with them at. But I know they're in Columbus. They're in Indianapolis, Carolinas, they're in Tennessee. They've grown that brand quite a bit.
Did they have music too, or was it just a?
No, that was not a music video.
Okay, so it's just a tribute to.
Yeah, the music there is a tribute too, and they would play kind of spaghetti westerns and Clint Eastwood flicks and stuff on the TV all the time.
Yeah, so a definite vibe. So where did you move on after that? Because I mean, you, from what I can tell, have made a relatively quick path to ownership. which is amazing.
Yeah, I have, and I'm lucky to say that I was able to do that. After I graduated college in Cincinnati, I moved actually to your neck of the woods and lived in Los Angeles. Loved LA. It was great. And I moved, I was there for right at like 2 years. I was there actually playing piano with a band that I was in college. And once things kind of went dry with the band, it was time to try somewhere else. And honestly, I just didn't want to be the hipster that moved straight from LA to New York. I was like, this is a little cliche. And they were opening the Bakersfield in Cincinnati at the time. And I saw on Facebook, they're like, we're hiring bartenders in Nashville. Mm-hmm. They were opening the one down here at the time. Mm-hmm. And I called them and was like, or hit them up. And I was like, I've never been to Nashville. You think it's cool? And they're like, well, come out and open the restaurant and stick around if you want. Yeah. And that was like 6 years ago. And I've
amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
Did not see myself settling down here in the way that I have, but I've
yeah.
Nashville's been incredibly kind to me. It is.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's all I can really say about this city.
That happened to me with Los Angeles. I'm from San Diego. I lived in the Bay Area for a long time and I was decided, okay, I'm going to move to LA, see what that's all about. And I had a job lined up, but it went away because of 9/11. Wow. And Amoeba Records, you know, Amoeba, you lived here for a minute.
Absolutely.
I, in the Bay Area, I knew the owners. I was friends with them. I worked in radio. And I called them. I'm like, I know you're opening a store in LA. Can I please work there? And they were like, oh my God, absolutely. So I came in and I helped open that Amoeba in LA. And same, I was like, just LinkedIn. I knew all the bands. I knew all the everybody. And it was fantastic. It was the best way to land in this town. And I feel the same way as you did. I felt like LA was giving me things. You yeah. know, it was sort of like it welcomed me here, and it doesn't welcome people, as you probably know.
It's funny because a lot of people in Tennessee have hard and fast ideas about Californians. They're like, oh, how was LA? And I was like, mm-hmm. It's a fantastic city to be young and dumb in. Like, I was like,
that's true.
Standing behind cool bars, making money, and like,
right.
Like, it was great. You know, like I had a great time. I learned a ton about the bar and restaurant industry while I was mm-hmm. there.
Where were you working when you were in LA?
The first bar I landed at, I was at a spot that isn't there anymore called The Proper. That was out.
I remember The Proper. I totally yeah. knew that so place. Yeah.
They had, speaking of being a dork, they had like in selection in the country at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so Whitechapel opened, I think. In San Francisco.
They were boasting it. And mm-hmm. I don't think they even called them out on it. so that was their claim. And it was super fun to get like, into the gin there and stuff. We did like mm-hmm. a house-made gin that I was hiking out along foothills to grab like wild sagebrush and stuff like that to make up cool gins. And it was a really rad time. I left them to go to Good Times at Davy Wayne's.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is a cool venue bar.
Yeah, yeah.
Total change of pace and great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I...
Totally different, but who doesn't like drinking in their dad's, you know, 70s playroom or whatever?
Yeah, and Good Times was a really good time. Mm-hmm. And last job that I had while I was in Los Angeles was in the Arts District at 82.
My bar is right up the street from there.
Oh, actually. Really?
Yeah, it's called The Mermaid. It's in Little Tokyo, so just a couple blocks up from there.
Mm-hmm. Super rad. Yeah,
yeah, so I was yeah.
Part of the opening team of all three of those. I really, for some reason, if I'm looking for a job, I always look to see what's opening.
Well, that's super smart. I mean, I'm sure that has helped you immensely in opening up this bar, you know, opening up your bar, because you learned a lot, I'm sure.
And something about like the we're not sure what's going on, you know, like you come in for training and actually you're putting bar stools together and like, and they're like, well, we don't have liquor yet, but you want to paint the bathrooms? And I'm like, kind of not, but yeah, I'm like into this. That's been super rewarding for me in my life. And almost every restaurant I've worked at in Nashville, I was there on opening day too. I'm like, yeah, I want to be there. Like, it feels so good to be part of that, you know? seeing it come together and stuff like that.
So you've been in Nashville for 6 years now, you said?
Yeah.
And yeah. you landed in Nashville, started bartending there. And what?
7 years now.
I'm doing 7 years. Yeah. yeah, it's going by. Well, you know what? We had that pandemic in the middle of it all. And that sort of makes our time skewed, I think, you know, and everything was closed, you know, during that time. So you got there and bartended, but at what point did you realize, hey, I could do this. I could be one of the owners.
It's been an aspiration of mine for quite a long time. And there's some folks that I really respect that were opening a restaurant like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And at the time saving money, I was like, I'm going to do something. And I was working at a great venue in town here called Skull's Rainbow Room. Mm. That's like a burlesque and jazz club.
Nice.
that I can't say enough nice things about Skull's. It's definitely worth stopping in if you come to Nashville. It's a very historic and iconic place too. but I was over there and was making great money over there, and cost of living at that time was a little bit lower in Nashville. And I talked to some people and I was like, I'd love to do this with you. Like, I want to do this thing. And they were like, dude, if you're saving that much money, you need to buy a house in East Nashville while you can still afford it. Mm. and you need to run a couple bar programs before you jump into the ownership side. And I took that very seriously. And I was like, you know what, actually, and I'm so glad I did. Because buying a house in East Nashville has been one of the smarter things that I've done in my life. That was super, no regrets on that one. I love my place. And then I went out and ran a couple bar programs and mm-hmm. they were totally right. You know, it's like, just because you are pretty good at standing behind a bar, mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. find somewhere that makes you do some paperwork, mm-hmm. you know, you got to go to the bank. You're running.
Yep.
Yeah. You're running out for oranges at like 4 o'clock on a Friday. Cause yep. you've ordered from, you know, all of those things. And I did. And I find management to be very rewarding. You know, I like to be the person who's like, look, I've done that before. I'll do it again. Like, mm-hmm. I want to help you. I want to make you better at this, you know? And I have a lot of people in my age demographic that are my peers that are like, how'd you manage to do this already? And I'm mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. and I tell all my friends, and I'm actually having dinner with somebody tonight. I'm like, dude, I will bring spreadsheets that showed exactly how much it costs. Like mm-hmm. I'll let you read our lease. Like I want to be a resource to people who like want to make this happen. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, don't burn a bridge ever. Because yeah. you're probably going to need to go back and ask those people for money at some point if you want to do this. And just the truth of the matter, you know, mm-hmm. I definitely have a former employer as one of my main investors, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. You're going to need that. And mm-hmm. it might not be the person that you're working for right now. It might be somebody that you worked for 3 or 4 years ago,
but yep.
don't let those bridges burn down. And eventually, you know, when the right thing comes along, which I hope it does for anyone who's aspiring to open a bar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully you got your ducks in a row and you're ready to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. I've got a river we'll flow on, even after we're all long gone. Got a river we'll flow on. Take me with you now before I'm
Our spot was a really, really wild story because I mentioned that it was a former employer who was one of my partners. He mm-hmm. had tried to hire me back to run a restaurant in a different city.
Oh. And
I did leave Nashville once in my stay here, and I went and opened a really cool distillery tasting room with some friends of mine in New Jersey mm-hmm. Called the Asbury Park Distilling Company. And I was running their front of house and tasting room. And it was one of these things where actually got great advice from my dad, which he's pretty good at that. And I was like, well, this is a kind of cool deal. They wanted to offer me a little equity stake if we clicked and I relocated to Asbury Park and wanted to grow this distillery with them, which we got along fine, but I was like, I don't think I want to moved to New Jersey. Like I, Tennessee was calling me back. And so I had a really fun summer up there. But it was funny because my dad was like, well, if you can go to a city where you don't know anyone and open a successful bar program, then you could probably just come back to Nashville and do the same thing mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. know that you can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, like know that you can go there and do that thing. You could do it probably in a town where you already have connections and know a lot of people. So it was mm-hmm. really fun. And I have a ton of love for Asbury Park, and actually have the guy who was my lead bartender at Asbury Park is now the general manager at Jane's on Top.
Oh, that's awesome. So you sold them.
He was calling more than one of us back. So yeah.
That's amazing. So, and Jane's has been doing pretty well in the short time you've been open, right? Didn't you guys like, doesn't the neighborhood love you?
It has. It's been great. So we won the Nashville Scene's Reader's Choice Best New Restaurant of 2020.
Nice.
2021.
2020 doesn't count.
It's a big year for us because it was an interesting time, but the restaurant that was in the space that James Hideaway is now in, when the shutdown happened, they already had some other projects they were working on, and they're like, we're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. And they went to the landlord and were like, we're out. And he was like, okay. And they essentially agreed that they would leave everything.
Wow.
Lock the doors and call it a day.
Yeah.
And so when we walked in, we had like forks and knives, plates.
Wow.
A furnished kitchen, and yeah. It's like, yeah, so like it's all here if you guys want to do it, but we started paying rent day one.
Yeah, yeah.
And we couldn't open the doors day one, you know?
Totally.
Like mm-hmm. it's yours if you want it, but you got a little crazy to sign a lease in June 2020, and we were like, all right, let's go for it, you know?
Okay.
But it was great because I had so many friends that were out of work at the time. And a restaurant that just needed a little facelift.
Right.
Would be ready to go. So I had musician friends of mine and bartender friends of mine and stuff. And I was like, man, I'll pay $100 a day to come paint or come do this and help me get this project up and running. So it was really cool. I got to employ a lot of unemployed friends.
Yeah.
The first 3 months while we were painting things and cleaning things and getting it, putting our brand on it. And then September 2020 is when Nashville started reopening at 50%. Mm-hmm. And it was great. A little bit of a blessing because we didn't have to do a soft opening. Because mm-hmm. I was like, if we're only filling half the restaurant.
Half of it anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we did, instead of a soft opening, we just did a silent opening. I was like, all right, this Friday, we're going to open the doors. And I'm not even going to put it on my Instagram. Like,
just let people walk down the street and see that it's open.
That was it.
Yeah.
I was like, this Friday, we're going to open the doors. No one knows we're here. So if things go awry or like, if we don't feel like we can handle what comes in, we're just going to close the doors because mm-hmm. we didn't tell anyone they'd be open. we don't have reservations on the books. Like, let's open from 5 to 10 all weekend and like,
we'll see what happens.
See how it goes. Yeah. And it was really cool. And I've never quite opened a restaurant like that. And I don't think you will ever be able to again.
Yeah. I was going to say it is definitely the last couple years have been, we're all just doing things and seeing what happens, you know,
one of one strategy, but I was just like, no, we're just not going to tell anyone. Also another big contributing factor to that is I have a lot of friends in Los Angeles, and mm-hmm. I have friends who own bars in New York, and I had a little bit of guilt being in Nashville and being like, my bar's open,
you know, it felt
very, I was like, there's no way to say this without sounding a little bit arrogant, you know, or a little bit just like, I didn't want to be like, hey, I know all my friends are still locked inside, but I just opened a new restaurant, you know?
Yeah. I understand. I mean, I'm in Los Angeles, but fortunately my bar serves food. So we mm-hmm. were able to be open, but you know, we were always cocktails first, food second, you know, but we kind of had to make it food first at that time. And same, we were doing gangbuster business You know, I mean, we were one of the few places in the area where someone could sit outside in a nice patio and have a drink and, you know, have some booze. And we had some guilt. It was all, it's almost like survivor's guilt in a way, you know, where we're feeling like, oh God, we're doing great right now, but we're only doing this great because nobody can go anywhere else. You know? And, you know, to be fair, we already were like a neighborhood hang, but and once everything did open up again, our business did go down, but not in such a way that it was dangerous to us. We were sort of like, this is a good reason for our business to be less. It means that people get to go other places again. Our friends, our neighbors get to be open again. But I feel you on that. There was sort of like this, to be the last person standing for a minute, you're like, I'm so sorry.
Like blow up your friend's Instagram feed and be like,
right.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Well, I think for you, that's, I think it's great that you got to do it in this way too, because especially during the pandemic, neighborhoods became even more important, you know, that community thing became even more important. And so we found that we had so many people coming to our bar who lived like within a block or two and had never been there before, because they're like, eh, we live in downtown LA, we can go anywhere, and they're doing whatever. But now they saw that we had a giant, we have food sign out front, and they're walking across the street, ordering food and taking it back to their home because it's safe and they can try our cocktails. And then we got to know so many of our neighbors, immediate, like people living in the apartments above us kind of neighbors, which was great. And for you, probably the same thing. People just walking down the street are like, hey, wait a minute, that place is open now.
Yeah. They're wait, they're here.
Yeah. They're- Something's going on over there. What's that all about?
When did that happen? I'm in Nashville. I mean, when things were shut down, so much construction got done in downtown Nashville.
Oh yeah.
Like an obscene amount of construction just got completed because they didn't have to worry about closing roads or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was this whole kind of like, you know, new crop of things that were opening up, and we got lumped in with some really cool, really, really neat spots. And
yeah
it was
awesome.
Like, yeah, we're still the new guys.
Yeah.
Though, and if we want to get into some music stuff too.
Oh yeah, I'm going there. But keep going.
Is the space is something that like deserves a little reverence because it is Boots Randolph's old jazz club.
No way. Yeah. That's incredible.
Boots Randolph operated a club in the space that is now Jane's Hideaway from the early 70s to the mid 90s. So
nice.
Like walking in there, I was like, music will happen here. We need to do this again. Cause they had like, the last tenant was like a seafood restaurant, and there's been a few there between the 90s and now, there's been a number of things that have happened, but it was like, this room is dying for some music, you know? And like, it needs to be central and focal. And I mean, so neat. There's definitely a ghost down there. I don't know if it's Boots. If it is, like, I hope he's stoked, you know?
Like, I love ghost stories, so you have to tell me at least one there. You know, you gotta have something.
Yeah, there's the ghost at Jane's is super, super friendly. There's a mezzanine section that we open for private parties and stuff like that. And pretty much everyone who works there is like, because we have it closed off unless there's an event up there. And everyone who works at Jane's at some point's been like, do we have an event upstairs? Because it's like you see a dude kind of standing in the corner up there, just kind of watching the band.
Nice.
And it's like, no. Nope. And then they're like, never mind. Like, I hope he's stoked, because he mainly just like hangs in the Phantom of the Opera style up there, just watches some music and like.
Nice, oh, nice.
Tired of this band, man. Like they're pretty sick, you know.
Like, well, you said it's bluegrass that you have downstairs most of the time.
Yeah,
that kind of thing. I don't know. Maybe you have to have a jazz night or something and see if that ghost shifts.
Let's see,
you know, does a little move, little dance, and yeah.
We've had, you know, maybe he would be upset if we had a saxophone player.
That's true. That's a good point.
The Nashville saxophone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I grew up playing piano.
Yeah.
I have a piano in my house for the first time in like 15 years.
That must be kind of great, huh?
Oh, it's super nice. It's an upright. It was a very odd circumstance. I had, again, just employed some friends of mine. I posted on Instagram. I was like, hey, I need to move some furniture out of the restaurant. If anyone's got time tomorrow, I'll pay you $100 if you show up and help me move some heavy stuff. And we were just going to throw it in the shed at my house. And we literally pulled this U-Haul full of like chairs we weren't using into the alley. Mm-hmm. And there was an upright piano
in the alley
behind my house, which like doesn't happen. It's
what?
Area. And I like went over and there's like some dead keys and it's like, mm-hmm. doesn't have a brand on it at all. It's definitely not a nice piano. Piano, but I was like, okay, somebody threw this piano away. It doesn't look like it's been out here that long. And I was like, how weird is it that I have three guys with me?
Yeah.
That all happen to be here on the pretext of we're moving heavy things tomorrow. You know, and like, I'm like, guys, this piano happens to be here.
Let's warm up.
Yeah. Thought that I conned them into moving a piano. Like, it would be pretty easy to claim that I did. I was like, so we got to take this into my house. Like, I kind of need, we got to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. We could have picked it up and we're like, oh yeah, we can move this. It's not a luxurious piece of.
Yeah, but it'll do right now. You know, I'm sure it's fun to play.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So what made you start playing piano? Was it something that like your parents decided you needed to learn an instrument, or did you hear something that motivated you to choose one of the most expensive instruments you can learn to play?
No, I definitely had friends growing up that were taking piano lessons that have like, you know, pianos in their homes already and stuff like that. And at some point in like second or third grade, I asked my parents if I could like take piano lessons. I was like, I like you were talking about some people when they're like in their teens and they see someone bartending, they're like, I want to do that. I saw friends of mine learning how to play piano. I was like, I want to do that. And I played quite a bit and played with musicals at my high school and stuff like that. And once I got to college, I kind of fell off. I stopped playing as much. I think it was my junior year in high school. I played the score for Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat with our high school theater.
Orchestra, yeah.
Yeah, and I was taking lessons like three times a week, and my parents, again, were smart on this one, because I wanted to go to college for piano performance. Mm-hmm. They're like, well, I mean, this is kind of what you would be doing if you did that, so why don't you take on this very difficult task and tell me if you still want to do that forever. Like, I got through that, and I was like, no, that I enjoyed it, but it took all the joy out.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
That's not what I want to do.
Yeah. But you still wound up in bands at some point.
Yeah, yeah. So I still ended up playing keyboards with some people and stuff, you know, like that. And then, oddly enough, I'm like the only person who moved to Nashville and like doesn't play. Like, I played music up until the time I got to Nashville and was like, I'm done. Like, I'm.
Well, what kind of bands were you playing with when you were doing that?
Mainly doing production and stuff for a hip hop group.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that was completely unexpected for me. I would not think you'd be playing piano and doing keyboard work for hip hop.
Yeah, so, no, I was doing sampling and drum patterns and stuff like that for.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was super fun and still something I think is really cool. I mean, I still listen to a lot of rap music and yeah, definitely enjoy it.
Help me out here. Some piano hip hop kind of stuff. Cause all I can think of is Dre.
Dre's great. It was more like most, I would say hip hop producers spend a lot of time in front of a keyboard, whether or not they're playing straight piano is not, you know, I wasn't playing straight piano.
Yeah. Before. Yeah. Yeah.
Not rapping over Coldplay.
Yeah.
Bitches ain't shit, you know.
So what was it that you were doing then? Like
Ableton Live production kind of
nice.
Stuff.
Nice. Okay.
Picking it off of, yeah, using a keyboard backbone and then playing live keys.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's really cool. And then you came to Nashville and you were done. No more music. Now it's just for you in your house on your upright piano with, did you fix those keys?
On my therapy piano. I did. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. There you go. Therapy piano. I like it.
It's great. It's so much better for you than Netflix at the end of a night to like.
Actually, I agree with that. Cause that would, yeah. I mean, I can't play piano, but when everyone was around, I'd tinker around on it. And I used to play guitar a little bit, so I could pound out, you know, some things. And I'm like, you could recognize this melody, even though I'm not doing this with all of my fingers. I'm just using like two or three. But my husband is someone who he can play piano and he just makes stuff up, but he uses both hands and he's all over the place and he's never taken a lesson. And to me, it sounds wonderful. And he pretty much only does it after a couple drinks, but he will kind of go into a trance and just play. And that's the thing I think with piano too is, and some other instruments as well, but piano especially, I would think would be almost meditative in a way.
Yeah. I mean, and I do have a shelf of whiskey directly above my piano.
Oh, okay. Seems appropriate for an upright. Especially for someone who used to work in a burlesque bar, you know, you wound your way back.
Such great pianists to go through there. They do like live jazz band burlesque and it's unreal how good those guys are. So
with Jane's on top, you were saying that that's a place where you're hoping to highlight music that isn't necessarily already getting a lot of attention in Nashville, because we do know Nashville is like a country town, you know. It's all about that country music and everything, the various forms, country and western, as they say.
That is 100% down here. Mm-hmm. So Jane's on top, we do a wide birth of things up here, which is actually, I'm in Jane's on top right now.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a weekly hip hop night called Hip Hop on Top,
which
has been going really well because there is a.
Oh, I'm sure there's a huge hip hop scene. Mm-hmm.
There's a number of local artists, and they're like, dude, there's literally zero places in downtown Nashville that would ever do that. And I'm like, why not? You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't you? You know, we've started working with a comedy troupe up here. So we do like a monthly comedy night, which is really fun, which is yet another thing that just doesn't get a lot of traction in downtown Nashville. Mm-hmm. And then we have a really fun writer's round up here, which is a Nashville thing. A lot of people don't know what a writer's round is. But
I have no idea.
There's a lot of songwriters in town. Mm-hmm. And a writer's round is... every hour there's like three songwriters and they just go down a line and sing songs that they've written. And then the next hour there's like three more. So if you show up for like a 4-hour writer's round, you'll probably see 12 to 15 aspiring songwriters kind of getting up and being like,
that's playing awesome.
Like three songs each. And yeah, it could be really fun to hear some of these people. And you're like, okay, yeah, I could see that being a hit country song, or I could see that being a hip hop song. Like, yeah, you get it, you know? And so that's really fun. So we're not doing anything too experimental. We have a couple great DJs that play here on Friday, Saturday nights after 10 too. So we'll have some classic country Broadway stuff every now and then. Broadway's the main drag in Nashville, where all of my peers, you know, that own bars, I joke and call all the country stars in Nashville who own bars my peers. Oh yeah, Jason Aldean, like my peer.
Awesome.
So I love being like, oh yeah, my dear friend and peer, Justin Timberlake. We opened bars in Nashville at the same time. Like, two blocks that way.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, it is community and it's small enough, you know, you probably will be hanging out. Hey, what's up? Yeah. How's it going in your bar? Yeah. I wanted to ask you too, if you had, I love to ask this question in case you have an answer, and do you have a pairing, like when you're home, you were just saying, actually you get home and play piano a lot of time, but do you sip on some whiskey and play some piano, or what is your music? And, when you're not working, what is your music and booze combo when you're just hanging out and having some downtime for yourself. Or maybe not. Maybe it's when you're sitting at the bar. What do you want to be listening to and drinking when you're there?
I mean, yeah, me playing piano and drinking overproof whiskey at the end of the night is a very, very common one. I do, and I know a number of people feel this way, I do love music and booze combo. I would say I love cooking to like really aggressive rap.
You're gonna have to give me a song.
Rappers that I follow, like when a new album's out, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna listen to that next time I'm cooking, which doesn't like exactly add up, but like
I love it though. That's great. So, well, you know, I mean, I hear the like the aggressive rap for like my old workout trainer. That was what he always did. And, you know, it's kind of that beast mode kind of thing if you're working yeah. out. But it's funny to associate that mentality to cooking. You yeah. know, like I'm going to cook the fuck out of the steak, you know?
I'm the machine who is one of the members of Griselda. And they do, I mean, aggressive kind of very gang drug oriented rap music. And like, yeah. I'm like so excited to cook dinner to that tomorrow. Like that's going to be nice. It's like a very relaxing thing, very juxtaposed with
nice
be relaxing.
Well, when you're playing, what are some numbers you like to play on your piano when you come home?
I've been working through this Stride piano workbook that I picked up, so like which I think is like a really cool kind of barroom sounding,
yeah,
you know, Chaplin era Stride.
Totally.
Which I just think is a really neat style of piano that can lend itself a little country and a little jazz, but mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. It's super fun. So sounds great on a dusty upright. And mm-hmm. yeah, so that's my new kind of technique that I'm working on. So
that's cool.
Jazz classics and Stride style. And yeah, it's fun. It's difficult, but it's really neat.
But it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I like it. Well, now that you've told us what to listen to and drink, maybe we can wrap this all up and you can tell people how to find you, how to find Jane's, you know, all that for anyone who's visiting Nashville or anyone who's already there and hasn't checked out your neighborhood yet.
So Jane's Hideaway, we're on 3rd Avenue in downtown Nashville. Our back entrance is on Printer's Alley, which is a very cool historic part of Nashville. So you go down a flight of stairs in Printer's Alley to get into Jane's Hideaway. You can find us online pretty easily. Mm-hmm. You're the only Jane's Hideaway. I believe there was a hair salon somewhere that called Jane's Hideaway. Mm-hmm. Pretty easy to find at Jane's Hideaway on mm-hmm. Instagram. Myself personally, I'm at Whiskey Hold the Rocks on Instagram.
So yeah, Whiskey Hold the Rocks underneath. Do you even say John Pete? Is that even there?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You're super anonymous in your nom de plumes. No. Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
Awesome. And pretty much, and people can probably find you at the bar probably every day.
I'm here all the time.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it. It was so great to talk to John. I hope that if you are ever in Nashville, as I hope to be in Nashville one day, that you also stop and visit Jane's Hideaway. You can find them on Instagram at Jane's Hideaway. And then also find John at Whiskey with an E, Hold the Rocks, all on Instagram. And you've got to go over to my Spotify, Shebmo, Shebmo, and check out the playlist that John passed on to me. It features all the bands that have played at the bar, and it's a really fantastic set of music. Friends of Jane, there you go. Are you a friend of Jane? I think I'm a friend of Jane. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware,
a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com and also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, S-H-E-B-M-O. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.